Our thanks to everyone for their patience while we necessarily took care of some business. We're ready to hear number 043888, SUNY against the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is Stephen Becker. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Professor M. Sharif Bassioni, in his suit against the FBI. Your Honors, this morning I wish to address three different questions. First of all, whether the FBI's maintenance of First Amendment records dating back more than 30 years in the plaintiff's name retrievable file violates subsection E7 of the Privacy Act. Secondly, whether the court erred in finding and in refusing actually to address the plaintiff's expungement request. And thirdly, whether the court's statutory interpretation was an error with respect to the statutory amendment availability of subsection G1A. With respect to the first issue, this case represents a flagrant violation of subsection E7 of the Privacy Act, which prohibits government agencies from maintaining First Amendment records on the activities of American citizens. Now, in this case, factually, from 1970 to 1975, the FBI conducted an investigation. They closed that investigation in 1975, finding that Professor Bassioni had no ties to terrorist organizations and was not involved in any terrorist activity whatsoever. However, 30 years later, the FBI continues to maintain a file. And in this file, it contains information on Professor Bassioni's political beliefs, his views on American foreign policy, the Middle East crisis, as well as criticisms of the FBI itself for its selective harassment of Arab students in the 1970s. And in addition to this information, which directly implicates his First Amendment rights, the file also contains numerous documents with generalized descriptions of organizations that are described as terrorist in nature in his file, such as the Palestine Liberation Organization, Al-Fatah, as well as the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which is presently on the State Department's FTO list.
Now, curiously, in the context issue of this,
yes,
the things that are in there, that any reference to these organizations and to the professor, seem to kind of exonerate him from any nefarious deeds. And they seem to say that by putting those in that context, it not only is sort of enlightening on these organizations and everything, but also separates him from any bad activity. And I'm not sure that, you know, that might be something you'd want in a record, since they keep these things.
Well, the problem is, what is the purpose of carrying generalized descriptions of terrorist organizations in his name retrievable file? These descriptions have absolutely nothing to do with Professor Bassioni. They make no reference to him whatsoever. And yet their inclusion in his individual file under the First Amendment implicates that he, in fact, associates with these groups. This was precisely the issue that this court addressed 10 years ago in Becker versus IRS. In Becker versus IRS, the case involved three brothers, and individual files were open on each of the brothers. In these files, IRS agents had filled in numerous newspaper articles that had nothing to do with the particular plaintiffs, and they had to do with individuals who either were attacking IRS practices or who had been targeted by the IRS. The file also contained a flyer for a book by an alleged tax protester. In that particular case, the IRS argued that they had a right to maintain these files, even though they didn't have anything to do with the particular plaintiffs. So the question became, were these within pertinent to and within an authorized law enforcement activity? And this court said no, that it's not. And it's identical here, where you have these descriptions of alleged terrorist organizations in his individual file. Now, we're not dealing here with a case of a general file, for example, a general terrorism file. Now, maybe these kind of general descriptions of terrorist organizations and their leaders might have some efficacy for a general terrorism investigation, but their inclusion in an individual's file is highly prejudicial, and it implies that he associates with these groups.
How does that implication go against the finding that he said he's not a member or involved in any of these groups?
Well, he's not a member of that, but the fact that the government keeps a file that includes these documents clearly implies that he associates with those groups.
But the implication is overridden by the fact of their finding, then, that they said he doesn't belong to them.
But then why aren't these documents purged from his file? The FBI could simply make a statement that we conducted an investigation, a 5-year investigation, and we found that Professor Bassiouni had no ties to terrorist groups and was not in any way associated with terrorist organizations. That was all that needs to be included in his file. We don't need to have descriptions of general terrorist organizations in an individual file. That directly violates the subsection E7 of the Privacy Act. That's the very purpose that the Act was designed to prevent. It's interesting here that the sole reason given by the FBI for the continued maintenance of these records after some 30 years is one FBI agent's prognostication that it is extremely likely, in quotes, that we will continue to get information on Professor Bassiouni in the future. Well, that is precisely the evil that subsection E7 was designed to prevent. And one can look at the Senate report 93-1183, which is the most oft-quoted section as far as subsection E7. And it states there that this subsection was designed to prevent the maintenance of this type of First Amendment record on the off chance that the government might have the opportunity to deal with that particular party in the future. The problem with the inclusion of these types of First Amendment records, not only does it describe his views, for example, on foreign policy, his criticisms of the FBI, which apparently is being kept in here to red flag him in the future, but also by inclusion of these documents, it indirectly implies that he associates with these groups. And by having these documents in a file, it chills his right to free speech. He's going to be more afraid to criticize the FBI or make other statements because of the inclusion. Also, this could have an adverse effect on his future employment. For example, let's say Professor Bassiouni is selected for a federal judgeship, or let's say he has another position within the government. These documents could be used to look at his background and could be prejudicial to him. The amici filed, I think, an excellent brief that explained to the court the dangers of the assembling of political dossiers, and that's precisely what this is here. This is a political dossier that was prepared, and there is no justification under the Privacy Act for its continued maintenance.
Is there any exposure to any of this from another source other than his own inquiry into the FOIA?
I don't understand your question.
In other words, obviously, we're all federal judges, and we all got an FBI file on us somewhere because they investigated us. I've never asked to see mine, and I don't know if anybody's ever used it. I'm asking you, has anyone ever used that file against the professor or maybe in favor of him other than his own investigation of getting this information?
Yes, we do. I do know from some of the notations on the markings, which you'll see in the appendix to our complaint, that these documents were in fact shared with the CIA. So I do know that they were shared. As far as any other adverse impact upon Professor Bassiouni through the use of these files, I don't know of anything in particular.
Is that a recent sharing?
And I believe since
the 911 and the commission and all this stuff criticizing that the FBI and CIA are not properly communicating, therefore they
I don't know if there are any indications of when these files were in fact shared. I believe it was sometime prior to that.
Was it?
Yes. But that raises a very good point, and that is the very problem with this is that there are these future uses. That's why the FBI is keeping this file, and that's what the Privacy Act is designed to prevent.
Am I correct that, in your view, it all boils down to whether there is a legitimate, ongoing criminal investigation?
That's correct. That was precisely what this court found in the Becker case, is that in order for the maintenance of records to be pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity, if the investigatory purpose with respect to that individual has lapsed, then the maintenance is no longer pertinent.
And is that term, an ongoing criminal investigation, is not defined in the statute?
No, it's not. What the phrase in the statute, the law enforcement activity exception, is whether the maintenance is, quote, pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity. But in Becker, this court, this was precisely the argument that the IRS made. They said, well, we want to continue to use these documents on the Becker brothers. But in that case, the files had been closed in 1991. And this court in Becker found that that was unacceptable and
Absolutely.
That the fact that
the quotation you just gave me is what section?
Subsection E7 of the Privacy Act. It's called the law enforcement activity
That's
exception.
Right. Thank you.
Sure.
One of the difficulties we had with all of the briefs in this case was just following the references throughout.
I know they're very complicated statutory references.
In your view, what should a court do when it's faced with a suggestion that material should be taken out of a file and the government says that it has an ongoing need for this for legitimate law enforcement activity?
Well, setting aside the government's claim that they have an ongoing need, what this court should do is expunge all of these First Amendment records out of Professor Bassioni's file. There's no legitimate reason for these in the file. It's interesting.
How do we reach that determination?
Well, under subsection E7, all you have to determine under the law is whether the records implicate Professor Bassioni's First Amendment rights. And then the only other inquiry you have to make is whether the government has met their burden of demonstrating that the continued maintenance of these documents after 30 years is pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity with respect to Professor Bassioni.
My point is, suppose the government makes that allegation. How do we go about determining the truth of it?
Well, it's determined by case precedent. There are a number of cases that define what subsection E7 talks about and what an authorized law enforcement activity is.
That's what I'd like you to elaborate on.
Okay, sure.
It seems to me that that's going to become very important.
Yes, it's very important. And I think that, again, reference to the Becker case is the controlling case in the country on this issue. And there, Judge Posner, during the oral arguments on the case, very clearly stated.
I know you talk all about that. What people say at oral arguments, neither here nor there. I mean, what do I do? The government makes that kind of a representation. What does the district judge do at that point?
The district judge has to determine whether the continued maintenance of the First Amendment records in Professor Bassioni's file is pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity. And you define that to see whether they continue to have a current investigation on Professor Bassioni. And in this case, they do not. The government is not even claiming that they have a current investigation.
I believe you said there was a record under seal in this case. Am I correct?
It
speaks to that.
It never came out in the district court. I had no chance to challenge it, and the district court did not utilize it.
It's part of an ex parte submission by the same
agent.
Agent.
Yes, but it did not come out in the district court, and I would ask this court not to consider it because I had no chance to challenge it even in the district court, its admissibility at this point.
Well, except that they refer to it, and some of the things they can't publicly disclose.
Yes, but from what they
some justification.
But from what they did publicly disclose, their only claims were that they were going to use this on the general investigation of terrorism itself, not with respect to Professor Bassioni. So my contention is very clear. That is not within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity with respect to Professor Bassioni. You cannot fill his file with prejudicial records and then say, well, you know, we're the FBI and we're investigating terrorism, and because that's an authorized law enforcement activity, we can maintain these records. That's not what the Privacy Act says. There is no terrorism exception after September 11th under the Privacy Act. What you must determine is whether these records are relevant to a current investigation of Professor Bassioni for terrorism. If they are not, you must expunge the records because they are in direct violation of subsection E7. I will quickly address the issue of expungement, as that would be the remedy we would be requesting. I won't have time to get into statutory construction. But it's interesting, the FBI here seems baffled between the difference between a statutory amendment and expungement. Well, expungement is an equitable remedy, and this court in Becker, as well as numerous other courts, have held that an appellate court may grant expungement of offending First Amendment records even when a statutory remedy is not available. So that's what I would ask that this court do, is expunge these highly prejudicial records from Professor Bassioni's file. And I see my time for rebuttal is just about end, so I will sit down unless you have any further questions and reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Becker.
Thank you very much.
We'll hear now from Ms. Grove.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Tara Grove, and I represent the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Privacy Act recognizes that a law enforcement agency, like the Federal Bureau of Investigation, must have the authority to maintain records that are pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity. Thus, the statute expressly permits an agency to retain such law enforcement records, even records that pertain to an individual's First Amendment activities. The FBI properly maintained the records pertaining to Plaintiff Bassiouni, because those records are pertinent to the agency's authorized and legitimate investigations of Middle Eastern terrorism.
Even if it doesn't involve a criminal investigation with respect to the professor?
Nothing in the Privacy Act requires an investigation to be related to a particular individual or for an agency to think that a particular individual is himself engaged in criminal conduct. Rather, the statute specifically says that that it must be within pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity. Here, the records pertaining to Professor Bassiouni are pertinent to the agency's investigations of Middle Eastern terrorism, even though the agency perfectly admits that Professor Bassiouni is himself an innocent individual. His name has come up in past investigations of Middle Eastern terrorism, and in order to understand the context of those references to his name, as Special Agent Krupkowski explained, the agency has looked at its records, and those records have provided a context. And as Special Agent Krupkowski said, the agency is extremely likely to continue to receive information pertaining to Professor Bassiouni in conducting these lawful, authorized law enforcement investigations.
What do you say to your opposing counsel that we should not look at the ex parte submission by it?
If this court has any doubts about the FBI's assertion that these records are pertinent to its investigations of Middle Eastern terrorism, we encourage the court to look at the classified declaration prepared and submitted by Special Agent Krupkowski, and we can certainly make that classified declaration available to this court upon request.
It's not currently submitted to the court?
That record is being maintained, as all classified documents
right.
are, in a special location.
You've got
location.
it here in this building?
But we can make it available. I believe it is maintained by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in this area, but it can be made available to the court at this court's request if that's necessary.
Well, your brief asks us to look at it.
We definitely think if this court is not... We'd like more details than what is provided in the public declaration prepared by Special Agent Krupkowski. We would certainly encourage the court to look at the classified declaration.
Why do you need to maintain the information in his file as opposed to a general file dealing with terrorism?
The Federal Bureau of Investigation compiles a number of records in Middle Eastern terrorism investigations. If it comes across Professor Bassiouni's name, it needs to have the file under Professor Bassiouni's name in order to determine what is the relevance of Professor Bassiouni. It would be extremely burdensome for an agency to try to find in some general investigatory record materials pertaining to someone in order to figure out what is the relevance of those materials. And notably, the agency has determined that it is extremely likely to receive more information pertaining to Professor Bassiouni.
Why is that?
That is something that this court can look at in the classified declaration.
So that's all classified. I mean, that's my problem. Is mm-hmm. Because when we talk about in the statute, or unless pertinent to and within the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity, mm-hmm. we all are aware that there's an ongoing law enforcement activity, and that's mm-hmm. trying to prevent terrorist attacks and et cetera. And so that is a broad brush. And I guess the only way we can say that it's, for whatever reason, why his name comes up, which I don't know why his name as opposed to, say, my name, mm-hmm. And maybe I have a file, I don't know. So I don't know how we, without looking into all kinds of classified documents, how we can say one way or the other.
The only thing that Special Agent Krupkowski was able to say on the public record is that because of Professor Bassiouni's context and activities, the agency is extremely likely to receive additional information on him. If this court would like more details as to the precise investigative interests relating to Professor Bassiouni, we would encourage the court to look at the classified declaration, which, as I said, we can make available to the court.
Now, are you taking the position that it is necessary for the Bureau to to at least have that assumption. In other words, to if that assumption that the, you would see professor the professor's name again in investigating terrorism, if that assumption were not true, would you still have a right to maintain this file?
If there were no particular interest in Professor Bastianini, that is something that this court need not decide in this particular case, because the FBI, for reasons that this court can certainly discern, both from the public declaration and if it looks at the classified declaration, this court can see that that's an issue that need not be decided in this case.
Well, what cases would it? Because it would seem that there are certain people. Maybe because I'm not even sure what professor teaches, but if you teach certain courses in a university or in a law school and you have a certain background of education, then it would be more likely that that person would have correspondence and do other things, travel, etc., to places of interest to expand his expertise. Mm-hmm. Is that person automatically legitimately scrutinized and information kept on them under the scope of an authorized law enforcement activity?
Again, that is not an issue that this court needs to reach in this case. And again, we would encourage the court to look at the classified declaration in assessing the merits of the Federal Bureau of Investigation's position.
Well, the ACLU's brief, they of course go after the Patriot Act and a lot of other things that other people are going because of its investigatory powers and that sort of thing. And on the other hand, people look at this as a necessity to protect us. And all that flies in the face of the First Amendment, which is what I guess is sort of at issue. And I guess you're saying, well, we don't need to reach something. What is a limit of our reach in this case?
I cannot comment with specificity on the precise narrowness or the precise degree of the scope of this court's decision in this case. This court will learn a great deal more by looking at the classified declaration. And
there's no way around that, then, as far as writing this opinion.
If this court, based on what Professor, we believe that based on what Special Agent Krupkowski has stated on the public record, that is sufficient to support the FBI's position. But
and
this court is
that. What is that? What are you relying on? What did he say?
Special Agent Krupkowski said both that the FBI is, because of Professor Bastianini's contacts and activities currently in the and in the past, the FBI is extremely likely to receive additional information on him and needs to be able to evaluate that and needs a context for that. And this information is very helpful in evaluating and reevaluating the credibility of confidential sources. But if this court has any questions about that whatsoever, I would encourage the court to look at the classified declaration.
There. But that statement of the special agents would really be pertinent to any professor of Middle Eastern studies in the United States, would it not?
Again, I would urge this court to look at the classified
declaration. No, I'm talking about the statement you just made. That's on the public record. The statement you made on the public record that you say justifies in and of itself maintaining this file on the professor. That statement, the special agent statement, could be made about any professor of Middle Eastern studies in the United States.
That's actually not correct, Your Honor. The FBI has made a determination based on everything it knows about this particular case and this particular individual and its own investigations. The FBI has made the determination on the public record, which is all it can say on the public record, that it is extremely likely to receive additional information on Professor Bastianini. That determination and that statement does not apply to every professor, including every professor regarding Middle Eastern issues and every professor involved in Middle Eastern affairs. The FBI has not made that determination about any other professor that I'm aware of, and certainly not every professor that studies those issues.
Any professor who were to write critically about the FBI's handling of terrorism would end up with a file on the basis of what you said.
I would urge the court to look at the classified declaration.
See, there we go again. I mean, yeah, sure, that's a different, that brings the inquiry to a whole different plane. But on what you have said publicly here, your representation, the position of the United States government in this court today, I don't see how that language would not apply to anyone who did any serious writing on the matter.
And again, if this court has any questions in addition to
what the clear back in 74, quoting Professor Bassoni, is former president of the Association of Arab American University Graduates Association. There is no indication that he is a member of a terrorist group. He has spoken out against a number of inflammatory members in the Arab community and has acted as a quieting influence against any acts of terrorism in the Chicago area.
That's correct.
Do you believe, an indication that his contacts do provide a context for evaluating current things that are happening?
All of those past materials, yes, Your Honor, would provide a context for evaluating current information and additional information that the Federal Bureau of Investigation is likely to receive on Professor Bassoni. I would be happy to answer any other questions that this court may have about any of the issues presented in this case.
Apparently not, Ms. Grove. Thank you very much.
We would ask the court to affirm the judgment below.
Thank you. You have 1 minute, Mr. Becker.
Your Honor, what the FBI is advocating is a complete abrogation of the protections of subsection E7 of the Privacy Act. They are claiming that when they can conduct a terrorism investigation essentially on any U.S. citizen, and maintain in their files First Amendment records, in this case from 30 years ago. Now, as I said, we have no objection to them keeping general descriptions of terrorist organizations in a general terrorism file. But the maintenance of these kind of records in Professor Bassoni's own file when he has not been accused or under any investigation for terrorism is simply outrageous.
In the days of computer programs, is this distinction between general files and specific files a realistic one? No matter where the information is kept, they can plug the professor's name into a computer, and it'll bring up the whole mess wherever it is.
I don't know. There's been no cases on the issue, but the two cases that have been decided, Becker and McPherson, have in fact found a difference because it is name retrievable. Those documents imply that particular subject is engaged in those activities when those are First Amendment records. Where if it was in a general file, there would be no particular reference, and those would be permissible, but not in an individual file. So we would ask, Your Honors, that you reverse the judgment of the district court and rule in favor of Professor Bassoni. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel in the case for the very fine arguments today. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has now completed the call of the morning, and so we will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.